We were in Perek Bet. We went through the...
I have no idea where you are.
You have no idea where we are?
No.
Okay, should we start with Epstein Hebrew Academy? Block branch, computer lab.
We're not much further.
We're in chapter 2.
Oh, okay.
We're moving right along.
Do you have the little lip there?
Yes. Yes, my Tanakh thanks you all. All right. Chapter 2 is the story of the spies of Yehoshua. It's a story that we're familiar with. Some of these stories we're just familiar with because we read them in Shulas Haftoras. And that's fortunately and unfortunately how most of us actually are familiar with some of the basic stories of Tanakh. But nonetheless, or from our schooling, which is a whole different story, how much we are understand from those days. But the story of the spies of Yehoshua has really several components to it. Number one, it's the beginning of the story of how they come into the land of Canaan and the conquest of Canaan and the plan, for the strategic plan for the takeout of the first city that they will get to, which will be Yericho. But the other context of the story is that it's remarkably familiar to us because, right, Yeshua is about to enter into the land of Israel. First thing he does is he sends spies to spy out the land. Familiar to us because? We've heard that story before. Specifically?
Moshe.
Moshe, Parshat Shlach. That's exactly where things got derailed 40 years ago in context. By Moshe's mission, spy mission to Israel. And you have to ask yourself the question, why do it again? Right? Moshe's mission was such an abysmal failure, what would be the purpose of doing it again? Correlated question to that is, was Yehoshua's mission any more successful than Moshe's? And we know how we've read through the chapter, so we sort of know how it ends in terms of we have a sense, we know how it ends, and certainly sounds like it ends in a more positive outcome than Moshe's mission. The spies come back, they report to Yehoshua saying, Kinatan Hashem biyadenu et kol haaretz. The spies come back and they say, God has given all of the inhabitants of the land into our hand. Their hearts have melted before us. Come and let us go. Certainly sounds a lot more positive than Moshe's spy mission. So I'm going to assume for the moment, and it's an assumption we're going to challenge probably next week, but I'm going to assume for the moment that Yehoshua's mission was a success where Moshe's mission was a failure. And that begs the obvious question, which is...
That's so obvious.
Right? Which is why? How? What was the difference? What was it about Yehoshua's mission that was so successful, assuming it was successful, versus Moshe's mission that was such an abysmal failure? Was it just the fact that the generation was different, that the people were different? Was there something about the mission itself that was strategically different and that set a different tone? And that's really what I wanted to address first, is a comparison between the story of the spies that Moshe sent and the story of the spies that Yehoshua sent, parallel and contrast between them. And from there we can begin to kind of figure out where Yehoshua is going and what's happening. Excuse me. It's the same hand that I gave last week, and we may not need it today at all. It's the same one. It's the same one, and
I'm making a point. I'm sorry. It's a mere comment on information, not a very.
It's okay.
My teacher
Don't take it personally. It's all right.
Don't take it personally. Please. Actually, my Janice.
That's very good. Not to worry. Okay, let's go back. So Yehoshua, so the comparison to of the story of the spies of Yehoshua to the story of the spies of Moshe, we can schematically draw it out. There's a number of obvious differences. What I really want to do is I want to go back to Parshat Shlach. Go back to the story of the spies of Moshe, relearn that episode, bearing in mind the story of Yehoshua's spies. Now, if you're not familiar with the text, just it might be worthwhile just skimming through, kind of just bring yourself up to speed a little bit, because we're going to refer back to it. But we'll get to Yehoshua momentarily. The story of the spies of Moshe divides into two parts. Why? Because the story appears twice. And one of the major issues that the Mefarshim struggle with, and that is really the point of departure, is the fact that there are two different versions, so seemingly two different versions of the story of Moshe's spy mission. One in Parshat Shlach, and the other in the beginning of Parshat Devar. We are most familiar with the version in Parshat Shlach, because we read it, we talk about it, that's where the episode takes place. Mm-hmm. We are less familiar with beginning of Devarim, because when we get to Devarim, first of all, it's the summer, and I don't know, there's something about summer parshiot that is very different. And second of all, Sefer Devarim Bechlal is harder to understand. And third of all, nobody's mind is on the spy mission. They're in Devarim is a broad sweep of different issues, and nobody's really focused on a real in-depth analysis or comparison between them. But they really are very different. And I'll point out the differences, and we'll see exactly where this is going to go. But let me ask you four questions. Question number one, right, from Parshat Shlach. We'll do a quick review of Parshat Shlach. Right? Question number one, in Parshat Shlach, how does the story begin? Who initiates the instruction or suggestion to send the spies to Israel? All right, let's do this. Let's open up to Parshat Shlach. Let's start with it's Bamidbar chapter 13. Okay. Bamidbar chapter 13. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, shlach lecha anashim v'yaturu et eretz Kanaan asher ani noten l'bnei Yisrael. God said to Moshe, send people. What does v'yaturu et eretz Kanaan mean? Latur. Latur means? Say it again. You were 100% correct. Say it again. Latur means to tour. Correct. Latur means to tour. Taf Vavresh, T-O-U-R. Latur means to tour. To see, to look out. To what's a tourist in Hebrew?
Tayar.
That's not I wasn't being facetious. Yes?
But they don't use the word spy.
Not in Parshat Shlach. Never. You will not see it. I understand the English. I'm not responsible for the English, thank God. I'm not responsible for the Hebrew either, but at least... Yeah. V'yaturu et eretz Kanaan asher ani noten l'bnei Yisrael ish echad l'mate avotav tishlachu kol nasi bahem. How many? 12. One per tribe. Who? Who amongst the tribe? Kol nasi bahem. Every prince of the tribe. I mean, the nasi is essentially the leader of the tribe, the political leader of the tribe. So you take the politically appointed or leader from the Zkenim, from the Sanhedrin, the Nasi, whoever it is the top leader position in the tribe, that's who you're going to send. Moshe sends them from Midbar Paran by God's command, Kulam anashim rashei v'nei Yisrael hema, men of stature, leaders of Israel. Ve'ele shmotam, as for their names, and it gives you the names of all 12, of course, Yehoshua and Kalev amongst them. Skip down to verse 16. Ele shmot ha'anashim asher shalach Moshe latur et ha'aretz. These are the people that Moshe sent to see the land. Vayikra Moshe loshe benun Yehoshua. Moshe renames Yehoshua. We talked about that at the beginning of the year. Vayishlach otam Moshe latur et ha'aretz Kanaan. Moshe sends them to see the land. Vayomer alehem, instructs them. Aluze banegev v'alitem et ha'har. Go up, they were in the south. Moshe sends them from the south, from Moshe sends his the spies, they're encamped in Kadesh Barnea. So they're headed up from the south, which is why the first major city they get to is Hebron. When Yeshua sends his spies, they're coming in from the east, because they'd spent 40 years doing this. So Moshe instructs them to go up from the south, v'alitem et ha'ar, uritem et ha'aretz mahi, take a look at the land, explore the land, see its ve'et ha'am ha'yoshev aleha, ha'chazak hu harafeh, ha'ma'atu imrav, and take a look at the people. Take a look whether there's a not lot of people or a few. Are they strong? Are they weak? Uma ha'aretz asher hu yoshev ba, tovahi imra'a, and take a look at the land which in which they dwell. Is it good land? Is it fertile? Is it not fertile? Umahe'arim asher hu yoshev bahena habem machanim im bemivtzarim, and take a look at the cities. Are they fortified cities? Are they not fortified cities? Umahe'aretz hashmenahi imraza, and what about the land, soil? Is it fat? Is it not? Hayesh ba'etzimayin, does it have many trees? Vitchazaktem ulekachtem pri ha'aretz, and be strong and take from the fruit of the land. So just quick summary. What are the questions Moshe gives them? Let's get the list again.
Good or bad?
Right? Aretz. Right. Give me the Hebrew, Tova or Ra'ah. Next.
The people.
Chazak. Rafe. What are the words?
Ma'at.
Ma'at or Ra'ah. Three.
Arim.
Right. Ma ve'ta'am yeshev aleha. Uma. Second. Ve'temet ha'aretz ma'hi ve'ta'am yeshev aleha chazaku ha'refer ha'ma'atu imrav. Uma ha'aretz ha'yeshehu yeshev ba'tova imra'a. We did that already. Uma he'arim. If you can jump from aretz to am and then he goes back to aretz, doesn't he? Uritem et ha'aretz. Uritem et ha'aretz. Am. Then he has Uritem et ha'aretz tova or ra'ah. Then he has harim. What's the description? What does he say? Mahe Arim, right? Bimachanim or Bimifzarim? Machanim or Mifzarim? A Mifzar is a fortress, and a Machanim is a reference to Machane. What's a Machane?
Kind of camp.
A summer camp. Right? An army camp. Spread out. The difference between. The difference between a miftzar and a machaneh. A miftzar is a walled encampment. A machaneh is spread out over the field. Where does Israel have the advantage?
In a machaneh.
They're on equal playing field. Next.
Aretz again.
Talking about?
Shmeina
or Raza. Next.
Do you take it on the pre-alarm?
Ra'aza. Hayesh be'etz ima ayin.
Hayesh be'ra'aza and etz. And finally, nikri ha'aretz. Okay, those are the questions Moshe hands the anashim. I won't call them miraglim yet, because in Parshat Shlach you will not find the word miraglim. Nor will you find the root l'ragel. It doesn't exist. The only thing they are referred to as is tayarim, or ha'anashim asher ba'u milatur et ha'aretz, the people who went to see the land. In biblical Hebrew there's no word tayar, it's a modern Hebrew word, but they are described as the people who went to see the land. And that's number one. Number two, let's do a couple of other things. Whose idea was this? Whose suggestion was it? There. Forget Rashi for a moment. We all know. We went to Rashi. We're going to forget Rashi's coming for a moment. The idea comes from God. These are the questions that come from Moshe. And then, one more question. Where are they going?
Meishlach otam Moshe latur et eretz Kanaan, v'yomer alehem aluze b'negev v'alitem et ahar.
Go up from the Negev, go up the mountain, right? This is a mountain, to reach Hebron.
Verse 21, Vayalu Vyaturu et Aretz Mimidbar Tzin Ad Ruchov Lavochamat. They go and they take a look at the land from Midbar Tzin.
Midbar Tzin is Kadesh Barnea, that's where they are in the south, wilderness of Tzin, all the way up to Levochamat. Levochamat is the northern border of Israel. Whatever it is, it's the northernmost border of Israel. It's a big dispute amongst the Mepharshim where that border is. We talked about that when we did the borders of the land of Israel, remember? What the northern border is. But clearly, the message was they were supposed to go from where to where? From south to north. Entire land. Let me just add a few equations. How many are there?
12.
One per shevet. And who are they?
Nasi.
Kol Nasi Ben.
Verse 22. Ve'alu b'negev v'yavo ad Chevron. The mission starts. They go up from the south to reach Chevron. There they find the remnants of the Anakim, the giants of some sort, and Achiman Sheshai v'Talmai. V'yavo ad Nachal Eshkol v'yichtu misham zmora v'Eshkol anavim echad v'yisu b'mot b'shnayim min harimonim u'min ha'teinim. They take the fruit, they take the grapes. Why do they take the grapes? And of course, from here is derived the great symbol of Israel's tourist industry. Of the two spies carrying the grapes on the stick between the shoulders. Why do they take the grapes? As Moshe told them, to bring back the fruit of the land. Which is a strange thing to do for a spy mission. But, okay. They called the place Nachal Eshgol. And, 25, V'yashuvim mitur ha'aretz miketz arba'im yom. And they come back after 40 days. So how far north did they get?
Couldn't have gone that far in 40 days.
Oh, you can go the north. You can go all the way up to Lebanon and back twice over in 40 days. It's an 11-day journey from Egypt to Mitzrayim. From the south to north, it's 3 days from Hebron to Yerushalayim.
Abraham does it for the Akedah, laden with everything. How long does it get to the north and come back? Not a problem to go north-south for 40 days. That's easy.
But where does it describe them having reached? So on the one hand, it says they get to Nachal Eshkol, they take the grapes, and they come back. On the other hand, it says in verse 21, Ve'yalu v'yaturu et ha'aretz, and they get all the way ad levochamat.
So I need 40 days to get to the entire land, on the one hand. On the other hand, they seem to focus on Hebron, and you have to ask yourself, why? What's so special about Hebron? Kibri Avod. That's what it says. They got to Hebron, they got to Nachal Eshkol, they took the grapes, they came home. They only need 40 days to get to Hebron. Certainly get to the breadth, the north and south of the entire land, but it's not described to us. That's the picture of the mission as it is described in the outset in Parshat Shlach. From there, the story goes awry. They come back, they start speaking, they start saying, we saw the land, we saw the fruit, indeed, Zevat Chalav Dvash, Efes Ki Az Ha'am Hayashev Ba'aretz, but the people are strong, and the cities are fortified, and we know where the story goes awry. Again, what are they called? How are these people identified? Anashim Asher Bau Mi Latur Et Ha'aretz. As I said, the word Ragel does not appear in the parasha. That's Parshat Shlach. Well, that's the mission as it's described in Parshat Shlach. The same mission, without getting into what happens afterwards when they come back, but the same mission is described at the beginning of Sefer Devarim. Chapter 1. Chapter 1 of Devarim, starting with verse 21. Re'ein Natan Hashem Elokecha Lefanecha Et Ha'aretz. Moshe is speaking to Bnei Yisrael, telling them, reviewing for them what happened. They were encamped around Mount Sinai. They left Mount Sinai and they reached the area of Kadesh Barnea. Actually, let's start with verse 20. Va'omar aleichem, and I said to you, Batem ad har ha'emori asher Hashem Elokeinu noten lanu. We have come to the foot of the mountain of Emori, which is the mountain range that goes up what we call today Har Chevron. Ve'ein etan Hashem Elokecha lefanecha et ha'aretz. God has given you this land. Ale resh. Now go and conquer it. Do not be afraid, do not dismay, let's go onward, charge. You all approached me, and you said, let's send some people out before us, scouts. V'yachperu lanu et ha'aretz. Lachpor means to dig, or to spy, to investigate, to scout. V'yashivu otanu davar et haderech asher naleba ve'et ha'arim asher navo alehem. And let us then report to us which path to take and which cities to approach first. Vaitav hadavar, the matter seemed good to me in my eyes. Vaikach mikem shnei masar anashim ishachad l'shavet. So I took 12 people, one per tribe. Vayifnu v'yalu ha'ara, they turned northward. Vayavo ad nachal eshkol, they came to nachal eshkol. Vayiraglu ota, they spied out the city. They took of the fruit of the land. Vayoridu elenu, they brought back the fruit of the land. Vayashivu otanu davar, and they reported to us. Vayamru, and they said, Tova aratz asher Hashem Elokeinu natin lanu, the land that God has given us is very good land. V'lo avitem lalot, and yet you still did not want to go. And the rest of the story is the aftermath. Sounds like a same story, right? Except there are a couple of differences. Differences number. For example, let's start with whose initiative was the mission?
It seems like it was human based.
The people. No question. Vatikrivun elai kochem. You came to me. Nishlacha anashim. Not laktur et haaretz, but achor or l'ragel. How far did they get? Nachal Eshkol or Hebron? How long does it take them?
Doesn't say.
How long should it take to get to Nachal Eshkol and come back? A couple of days. Maybe 3 days? Most? Is there any reference to them having traveled north, to the north of the country? None. 12, how many people do they take?
12.
What report are they expected to bring back?
No.
What are the questions that the people offer to these spies?
How should we travel? How should we go?
Derech and?
Here.
What's not on their list?
The Arabs.
So I had two very, very different, somewhat problematic versions of the story of the spies of Moshe. The biggest difference, the most fundamental difference between them being, theologically difficult difference between them being, whose initiative is this mission? Why is that a fundamentally important issue theologically?
Hashem's hand doesn't seem to be in it.
Right. Number one, it's very different if the people made this request or if God made this request, but even more importantly, or more difficult, is was this mission doomed to failure? Rashi seems to have an approach to this story that says that this mission was doomed to failure. If it was doomed to failure, why did God send it? Rashi's answer is Shlach Lecha doesn't mean send, it means if you want, optional. Rashi tries to merge these two versions of the story by suggesting that God really didn't command. The people wanted, and God said, if they really want, go ahead. Shlach Lecha means Lecha, if you want, I'm not commanding you. I'm telling you, if you want to do it, do it. It's optional. So this is Rashi. The Ramban screams out of the paper. How can you possibly imagine that Shlach Lecha means anything other than a command? I'll prove it to you. Shlach is a tzivui. It's an imperative. Lecha is an emphasis. The grammatical structure of Shlach Lecha is identical to the grammatical structure, says the Ramban, of Lech Lecha. Optional? God says to Abraham, Lech Lecha l'Eretz Moriah and bring your son as an Akedah. Is that optional? Lech Lecha l'Eretz Asher Ani Erecha. Optional? Shlach Lecha suddenly should be optional? God says to Moshe to make two trumpets of silver. Asel chashtech atzotzrot. Optional? Impossible, says Ramban. Ramban says that there were, in fact, somehow the Ramban has another approach to merging these two issues. I'll show you a third approach in a moment, but before I do that, I have to throw one more difficulty onto the table. Take a look at the end of the story. Verse 27. Sorry, no, it's not verse 27, the end of the story. Where is it? The very end, starting with verse 34. Lamed Daled. Vayishma Hashem et kol divrechem. God heard your murmurings. Vayiktsof, got angry. Vayishava lemor. God took the following oath. Not one person from this generation will see the land. Zulati Kaleb ben Yefuneh yirena. With the exception of Kaleb, velo atena et haaretz asher darach ba'u levanav, and he will enter into the land. Ya'an Hashem yileh acharei Hashem, the land which he tread on. Which land did Kaleb tread on? Kaleb comes from Shevet Yehuda. What land did Kaleb tread on? Hebron. Notice there's no reference to 40 years in the desert. The 40 years in the desert is in Shemot, is in Bamidbar, is in Parshat Shlach, because it talks about 1 year per day. But there's no reference here to 40 days, so there's no reference here to 40 years either. Then, verse 37. Here's the real clincher. Gam bi hit'anaf Hashem biglalchem lemor. Gam ata lo tavosha. God was angry at me also because of you, and said, you also will not enter the land. Yehoshua ben Nun ha'omed lefanecha hu yavo shama. Yehoshua will take over, and he will enter the land. Remember the decree? Two people were promised that they would survive Chet HaMeraglim. Namely, Kalev and Yehoshua. Everybody else was included in the decree, including Moshe. Now, it's not the way I remember the story. Why I remember the story is Moshe was scot-free until he hit the rock, which is in year 40. That's not what the Pasuk says. What the Pasuk says is that God appointed Kaleb, said that only Kaleb would survive. God was angry at me too, said I wouldn't enter the land, and appointed Yehoshua to lead them instead. Which seems to mean, on the face of it, that Moshe was included on some level in Chet HaMeraglim.
Is that true?
Well, that's what it says. Is that true? Certainly what it says. So what do we do about this? This is where life gets really complicated. Now, I'll tell you a suggestion of the Ramban. Of the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel makes the following suggestion, which on the face of it sounds outlandish until you read this verse. Abarbanel claims that the story of the hitting of the rock is a smokescreen. That there's no reason, there's no rational explanation in the context of the story of the hitting of the rock that would explain why Moshe and Aaron were excluded from entering into the land of Israel because they spoke to the rock, which hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock, which hit it twice instead of once, whatever the nuanced issue is in the story of the hitting of the rock. The Mefarshim struggle with trying to figure out what the chet was, says the Abarbanel, because it's really, they're looking in the wrong place. There were two fundamental sins of the people in that generation. Two huge, humongous, enormous sins of that generation. They are Chet HaEgel and Chet HaMeraglim. Aaron had a role in Chet HaEgel. Moshe had a role in Chet HaMeraglim. They could not enter the land of Israel because they, in some level, were responsible for the two fundamental sins of the people. The story of the hitting of the rock, says the Abarbanel, is a smokescreen the Torah used to hide, out of cover to Aaron and Moshe, to hide the real depth of the Chet, which was their catalyst and their involvement in Chet HaEgel on the one hand from Aaron and Chet HaMeraglim on the other hand from Moshe. What role each of them played in that Chet remains to be discussed. Abarbanel has an approach to Moshe's role in Chet HaMeraglim. I'm going to take you on a somewhat different journey, but I want to show you. But the Abarbanel's thesis is important for us. In Chet HaEgel, Aaron's role is very clear. Moshe even gets angry at him for it. It seems in the parsha he gets off scot-free, the Abarbanel says. He doesn't get off scot-free. Ultimately, he will not enter into the land of Israel because of it. The Torah will address it later in some other way, out of covered to Aaron. What role does Moshe play in Chet HaMeraglim? That's the question. So there is an article in Chet Meraglim Wittenberg Medan many, many years ago. I think it goes back, it's probably going back 20 years or so, in which Medan puts forward the following thesis. What's described in Sefer Devarim seems like a very different type of mission than what is described in Sefer Bamidbar. If I'm sending spies to spy out the land, if I'm sending spies to determine the strategic weaknesses of a people and of a city, does it make sense to send them north, south, east, west over a 40-day mission to explore the land from every angle? Or do you try to limit the exposure of your spies to one area, one region, one city, one report? You're sending strategic reconnaissance spies on a very dangerous mission. Does it make sense? What's more rational, to send them north, south, east, west, length and breadth of the country, or send them to one city and report back on it?
I think to go to the whole country. Get a whole.
You've obviously never spent time in the army, right? Or in intelligence, or in reconnaissance. Neither have I. But think about it logically for a moment. You are exposing them to, if they're caught, they will be hanged. No, they will be hung. Hanged. I was right the first time, right? If they're caught, they will be hanged.
Executed.
So why expose them to 40 days, length and breadth of the country?
Because half on one mission, but can you know what's going on in the whole country?
You don't need to know what's going on in the whole country.
Why not?
Since when? You need to know at the Derech Hashem Aleba, at the Ira Sheileba, they need to know how to take out Hebron. No spy mission ever does a reconnaissance over the entire country, north and south. That would be absurd. It would be a guarantee failure. Look at Yeshua's spies. Look at Yeshua's spies. They are sent to Yericho. They spend 3 days in Yericho and they come back. Actually, I'll correct that. They spend one night in Yericho and 3 days hiding in the mountains because they're caught. And then they come back. You want to send 12 spies, north, south, length, and breadth of the country, for 40 days? And expect them to come back with anything of substance?
I guess we all need to go to the army.
Fundamentally a problem. When the people came to Moshe, they had a very simple request. Derech ir. Lachbor l'ragel. Tell us how to take out Hebron. Problem. At the same time, the people are coming to Moshe and asking Moshe to send a spy mission to spy out Hebron. Let me ask you another question. What's the logical number for such a mission? How many people would you send?
One,
two. You'd never send one because you always need backup. But unlikely that you would send 12. And even less likely that you would send 12 septuagenarians. Agreed? 12 Nisiim? What on earth would you send the Nisiim for? Your most exposed, visible, your elder statesman, that's who you're going to send on a reconnaissance mission. Do you know what reconnaissance requires? Look at Yeshua's mission. Look at the Yeshua's spies. They have to go hide in the mountains for 3 days because they got caught. You're going to send 12 Nisiim of the Shiftei Yisrael to go hide in the mountains for 3 days?
And climb down roofs?
It doesn't make any sense. Where would you need, under what circumstances would you need to send 12 Nisiim? So now, take a look, and again, let's take a look for a second. How are they described? They are described as, I need to erase something. Alright, I'm going to erase this. Right? How are they described? They are described as Kol Nasi Behem. They're described as Kulam Anashim. Rashi b'nei Yisrael, ish echad, l'shabbat. That's a ceremony with great pomp and circumstance.
So they're like ambassadors.
Where else in Chumash, related to the land of Israel, have we had such a ceremony? So take a look for a moment in Bamidbar chapter 34. Bamidbar 34 is a chapter we actually looked at briefly at the beginning of the year, which was because it defines the borders of the land of Israel. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, tzavet bnei Yisrael v'yamarta alehem ki atem ba'im el ha'aretz Kanaan, zot aretz asher tipol lechem benachala, eretz Kanaan ligvuloteha. This is the land of Israel that will be yours, the land of Israel, or the land of Canaan, according to its boundaries, borders. This chapter defines the boundaries of the land of Israel. And once you define the boundaries, what has to happen next? You have to apportion the boundary, the land, to each of the tribes. Take a look at verse 13. Vayitzav Moshe et bnei Yisrael lemor, zot ha'aretz asher titnachalu ota begoral. This is the land which you will divide by lottery. Asher tziva Hashem latet l'tishat ha'matot v'chatzi ha'mateh. Land divided to 9.5 tribes. Why 9.5 tribes? Because 2.5 took their portion already east of the Jordan. Skip to verse 16. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe lemor, Eile shmot ha'anashim asher yinchalu lachem et ha'aretz. These are the names of the people who will stand with you in a ceremony to divide the land. Elazar ha'kohen v'yeshua binun, led by the Kohen and the Melech. Elazar ha'kohen and Yehoshua. V'nasi echad mimateh. One person, one nasi per tribe. Tikhu linchol et ha'aretz, to divide the land according to tribal inheritance. Ve'ele shmot anashim. These are their names. Lematei Yehuda, Kalev, Ben Yefuneh. Lematei Bnei Shimon, Shmuel Ben Amihud. Lematei Binyamin, Elidam Bekislon. We'll go through the names of all 12 tribes. Ele asher tziva Hashem l'nachalet Bnei Yisrael be'eretz Kanaan. To divide the land according to tribes, you need a ceremony with one tribe representative, one nasi per tribe, for the purpose of fair division, an equitable division of the land. Why do I need representatives of each tribe? Now, only problem is it's done by
lottery.
So why do I need the tribes there? Make sure there's no cheating. I'm talking about the Kohen and the Melech. I'm talking about Yeshua and Moshe and Aaron, or Elazar and Yeshua. Bechlal, this whole lottery is very strange. I'll show you something else about this lottery. Turn to Yehoshua chapter 18. Yehoshua chapter 18, I'll just give you a brief synopsis into context. That way when somebody asks you where we're up to after having started in September, you can say we're up to chapter 18. The conquest of the land of Israel takes place in two stages. Stage one is a national army. All the tribes of Israel together, one army led by Yehoshua, one camp in Gilgal. They take a strategic hold of the land of Israel, 4 or 5 major battles that divide the land into regions and essentially secure the land militarily and remove the strategic threat from the local populace. Stage two, and then at the end of that section, there is a list of all the kings that Yeshua and his army conquers, chapter 12. From chapter 13 and on, Yeshua turns to the camp of Israel and he instructs them and says, okay guys, now you're on your own. Every tribe has to go to their tribal territory and conquer it, settle it, remove the population if need be, settle in the land. There is a part two to this conquest. And Yeshua can lead an army to secure the land militarily, but he can't settle the land. That each tribe has a responsibility to do. For a long time, they don't do what they're supposed to do. Each tribe remains in Gilgal. They like the security of the home. They're not quite ready to break away from the mothership. Finally, in chapter 18, Yeshua, in an act of desperation, takes the Mishkan apart, hoping, with the Mishkan is sitting in Gilgal, hoping that that'll encourage the tribes to break camp and go to their particular local territory, and he moves the Mishkan to Shiloh, in the center of the country. All in an effort to break up the camp in Gilgal. Before he does that, or as he does that, this is the beginning of what happens in Shiloh, chapter 18. Vayikahalu kol adat bnei Yisrael Shiloh. He brings the entire camp of Israel to Shiloh. Vayashkinu sham et o moed, and there he places the Mishkan. Vaharetz nichbesha lifnehem, and the land is conquered before them. Vayivatru bnei Yisrael asher lo chalku et nachalatam shiva shvatim. Yehuda took the south, and the 2.5 tribes in the east are there, but there remain 7 tribes that did not break camp and go to their local territory. Vayomri Yoshua b'nei Yisrael. So Yeshua turns to b'nei Yisrael and he says, Adana etem mitrapim lavol ha-reshet ha-ta'aretz. How long are you going to be lazy? You're going to procrastinate the conquest of the settlement of the land of Israel, which God has given you. Havu lechem shlosha anashim lashavet. Give me 3 people per tribe. Ve'esh lachem, I will send them out. V'yakumu v'yitalchu ba'aretz. Let them go and walk the land. V'yichtevu ota lefi nachalatam. And write the boundaries, record boundaries between each of the tribes. V'yavo elai, and bring those boundaries to me. We call them surveyors, cartographers. V'yitchalku ota l'shiva chalakim. And we will divide the land into 7 parts. Yehuda ya'amod al gvulo minegev. Yehuda already took their territory in the south. U'beit Yosef ya'amdu al gvulam mitzafon. Beit Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh have already taken their territory. And the rest of the tribes, which are sitting in the camp and refusing to move, will have a division of the land. Each tribe will know where they have to go, because we're going to send out surveyors. They're going to survey the land and come back to us with a report. V'yatem tichtevu et ha'aretz shiv'a chalakim. To write up the map of the land, the survey of the land, according to 7 parts, v'yatem alai hena. What will I do with that report? V'yariti lachem goral po lifnei Hashem alakim. And I will use the goral to divide the land. Ki'en chelek l'alavim. Now he talks about why there's 12. The Levim aren't included, and the 2.5 tribes in the east have already got their land, so the rest is a survey report on the 7 tribes. Verse 8, Vayakumu ha'anashim, vayelechu, the people got up and went, vayitzav Yeshua et halochim lichtov et ha'aretz lemor, Yeshua gives them instructions. Lechu v'itachu ba'aretz, go walk the land, v'kitvu ota, write it down, v'shuvu elai, and come back to me. Ufo eshlich lachem goral lifnei Hashem b'Shiloh. And then I will throw the lots here before God in Shiloh and divide the land according to their tribes. The rest of the section of Sefer Yoshua from chapter 18 and on is Vayal Goral. The Goral is the division of the land of Israel according to each tribe. Ask me the obvious question, a simple question. If I have a Goral, then why do I need the surveyors? If I have the surveyors, they're going to divide the land according to tribes. Why do I need a
goral?
Goral.
What's a goral?
Gaol is this lot. They're going to, the Urim V'Tumim, the breastplate, they're going to divide who goes where. What do I need it for? I have cartographers and surveyors. If I have the cartographer, if I have the Gaol, what do I need the surveyors for? I'll go one step further. How did Shevet Yehuda know where to go if the Gaol had not been done yet? How did Shevet Ephraim and Menashe know where to go if the Gaol had not been done yet? How do these seven representatives of the remaining tribes know where to go if the Gaol had not been done yet?
Maybe the Gaol is supposed to give them assurance that Hashem has given this stamp on it.
Correct.
Yes, we know what the places are, but this will make it Hashem.
Correct. In other words, what you're suggesting, which is quite a new idea as far as our typical understanding of the story of the Gaol, but I think it's correct, is that the Gaol was not to divide the land. We divided the land. And I'll tell you exactly according to what criteria in a moment. The Gaol was to grant divine approval to the division that we established. Was to give it the shtempel. What do they call it, an imprimatur?
Mm-hmm.
The division of the land of Israel in gross terms, in broad sweeping terms, which tribes would be where, comes from where? How do they know which tribes would live where? Who set the basic criteria as to which tribes would live where? It's on the tip of your tongue. No, tip. Correct. You can see it, right? Yaakov. Yaakov and his blessings to his children, that's exactly what Yaakov does. Yaakov's blessings to his children are not arbitrary. They're not, oh, you're good and you're bad. They were a division of the land. What was his inheritance? What was his Yerusha? A man lying on his deathbed, what does he give to his children? His Yerusha. What's Yaakov's Yerusha? The land of Israel. He gives the land of Israel to his children and he divides it according to the tribes. The first thing he does is he takes Shimon and Levi and he says to them, the first thing he does is he takes his firstborn Reuven and he says, the double portion that goes to the Bechor, you're not getting. Does that sound like a Yerusha issue? Then he takes Levi and Shimon and he says, I can't put you together, I have to divide and conquer. You will not dwell together, you will not be united. Levi gets divided up amongst the cities of the Levian because he redeems himself in Chet Meraglim, in Chet Egel. Shimon, for various reasons, loses his nachla altogether. Shimon does not have a nachla because of Yaakov's instruction and because of Shimon's involvement in the Chet Baal Peor. And just to add add insult to injury, Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshat V'zot Bracha reviews the division of the land of Israel by tribe. He goes over all of the tribes one by one to identify their land and territory. There's no bracha to Shevet Shimon in Parshat V'zot Bracha. He's completely left out of the list. I don't know if anybody ever notices it. We read Shevet V'zot Bracha every year. Shevet Shimon's not on the list. And then he goes on from there. Yehuda, he gives the area of Geffen and Yayin. He talks about the donkeys that you can, that you'll, Osvila Geffen, he wrote, ties donkeys to the grape, to the vine, to the grapevine. Anybody been to the area of Gush Etzion recently? Right? What's the agriculture of the area of Gush Etzion?
Wine,
grapes. And from the Asher, which is in the north, which is in Lebanon, which is where all the olive trees are. And he gives the olive, the oil, the shemen,
to
Shevet Asher. Zvulun, Lechof Yamim. Zvulun is put on the coast. Lechof Yamim Yishkon. Each one of the tribes is given their region according to where they would be. Shevet Dan. What does he say to Shevet Dan? Dan nachash alei darech. Dan is a serpent along the way that bites the heel of the horse and throws him backwards. Moshech ikvesus vayipovach vo'achor. What does that have to do with anything?
Like the Plishtim
Correct. Shevet Dan was given the Eretz Plishtim. Shevet Dan was given the coast. Shevet Dan is the only one of the tribes that has no mountain region. He had to deal with the Plishtim of chariots, the Plishtim of horses. How do you deal with horses? How do you deal with chariots? They're a tank. How does a foot soldier deal with take out a tank? They don't have RPGs. How does a foot soldier take out a tank? How does a foot soldier take out a tank if you don't have an RPG? There's only one way to deal with a tank. Take out the wheels. The most vulnerable part of a tank are the wheels. The most vulnerable part of a chariot is the horse. The only way to take out a chariot is to find some way to get behind him and take out the horse. Like a snake who reaches up and bites the heel of the horse goes crazy and the rider falls out backwards. She says it's a remez to the story of Shimshon. Bezat Hashem, one day we'll learn Shimshon. That Shevet Dan. Moshe, in Bezot HaBracha, took a look at Yaakov's Bracha to Shevet Dan, anticipated that Dan was going to have a problem with this, and added to the Bracha of Shevet Dan, Yuzanek Min HaBashan, that Shevet Dan would get sustenance from the Bashan. The Bashan is Har Hermon. So Moshe gives Shevet Dan a section in Har Hermon in the north. The brachot were all about tribal inheritance. They hadn't thrown a single lot. They hadn't thrown a single part of the Gorah. And they all knew exactly what area they were going to go. The only difference was that it's one thing to know what the general area is. It's another thing altogether to know where the boundaries are. The boundaries are a function of A, quality and fertility of the land. B, to be equitable, the fertility of the land has to match the size of the population of the tribe. For that, I need surveyors and cartographers to go to map the land to see what's inhabitable and what's not inhabitable, how much of the tribal territory is a jungle or a forest that can't be inhabited, how much of it is cities, what kind of land is it, what kind of fertility is there. It's a very different kind of mission. So to divide the land before you enter into the land by tribal territory, I need a representative from every tribe together in one group to equitably and fairly divide the land of Israel according to its tribes, fertility of the land, and size of the shevet. Then I'll come back and conduct an enormous ceremony of pomp and circumstance with the goral, and assign each shevet their territory specifically, give it the divine stamp of approval on the maps, send every shevet on their way. Shlach lecha nashim v'yaturu et eretz kna. Let them go look and explore the land of Israel. Kol nasib ben. Ish echad l'shav. It's a fundamental difference between spies and surveyors. Surveyors don't usually invite as much. They don't invite as much suspicion or attention because they're looking at different things. A spy who's looking at the strategic weaknesses of a city and its walls, its sources of water, how are you going to starve the city? How are you going to besiege the city? Where are the waterways coming into the city and the waterways coming out of the city? Those kinds of investigations usually invite scrutiny. Land surveyors, cartographers who are looking at how high the mountain is and where the trees are, they're a dime a dozen. God's mission to Moshe in Parshat Shlach was send 12 cartographers, surveyors, do exactly what Yehoshua did in Perek Yud-Chet of Sefer Yehoshua, bring them back, conduct the ceremony, divide the land of Israel before you go in. So every Shevet knows where they're going. For that you need 12 Nesiim, 12 people. For that you need the representative of the tribe, you need somebody that the people are going to trust, because we're talking about the equitable division of the land of Israel. You need the Nesiim, you need Kol Anashim Rashi B'nei Yisrael. And what questions are relevant to such a mission? Here are my list of questions. What questions are relevant to such a mission?
Is it relevant to ask whether the people there are strong or weak or many or few? If I'm looking at a survey, the local population. If I'm looking at a survey for the purpose of dividing the land amongst your population? No. Do I need to know whether the land is good or bad, fertility-wise?
Yes.
Do I need to know if the cities are walled cities or if the army there in camps, in open camps? Do I need to know whether the land is fat or thin and whether there's trees?
Yes.
Do I need to know what the Priya Arts looks like?
Now let's look at the people's mission.
You came to me and you asked me to send people to spy out Hebron. To spy out Hebron, which cities to conquer, which road to take. And that's a scouting mission, that's a spy mission. How many people do I need for that mission? Minimum of two, probably a maximum of two. Who do I want to take? Young, strong individuals who can hide in the mountains if necessary. What kind of questions do I want to ask them? What kind of questions are they looking at? Are they looking at the land, whether it's good or bad? Irrelevant to them. Do I want to look at the city, the people, whether they're strong or weak, many or... Do I want to look at the cities, whether they're fortified or encamped? Understand what happened? God gave Moshe a command to send mission a surveying cartography mission of dividing the land of Israel by Beersheba. The people came to Moshe and asked for mission B, namely, two people, Ragel Lachbar Dar. Vayitav be'enai hadavar va'ekach shneim asar anashim ish echad lashavet. It was good in my eyes. You came to me and asked me to send spies, and I said, hey, great, I'm already sending 12 people anyway. They're already going. So on the way, while they're going to take a look at the fertility of the land and to take samples, v'itchazaktem ve'vetem mipri ha'aretz, along the way, I'm going to add to their job description one additional point. You're going to be passing through Hebron anyway. You're going to go to Hebron for the purpose of looking at the fruit of the land in Nachal Eshkol. Do me a favor. Stop into Hebron for a minute and take a look at where the sources of water go into the city and go out of the city, how to besiege the city, how to conquer the city. Do me a favor. Take a quick scouting mission in Hebron and then get on your way. Who combined the two missions into one? Moshe. And the moment he did that, he fated the mission to failure. Because the moment they got to Hebron, they were discovered. The moment the Yeshua's spies got to Yericho, they were discovered. And if Yeshua's spies had to spend 3 days hiding in the mountains of Yericho, can you imagine what Moshe's 12 spies were doing the 40 days were walking up and down the length and breadth of the country? And the fear they must have come back with? Because a mission that was meant to be kula kodesh, a mission that was meant to be pure and holy and deal only with the sanctity and the division of the land of Israel, was spoiled and transformed into a spy mission because that's what the people wanted. And Moshe, in his greatness and in his naivete, couldn't see that these two missions could not be combined. If you joined them, you doomed them both to failure. And that's exactly what happened. Is it a surprise then that at the end of the story of the spies, God says to Moshe, you're not going either? It's a sad story, it's a tragic story, but the tragedy is partially Moshe's tragedy.
So why did we need the smoke screen at the beginning?
The end. Because the Torah, because out of cover to Moshe, the Torah didn't want to go into the great detail of Moshe's failure here. It was too painful an issue. So the Barbanel says, out of cover to Moshe, the Torah, addresses it in the context of some other chet that he did that was much smaller, much less significant. But fundamentally, gam bihit anaf Hashem biglalchem, says Moshe in Sefer Tvarim, finally admits that the real source of the problem for him was here. 40 years later, Yehoshua is going to send spies into the land of Israel. What does he do? He learns Moshe's lesson. He takes two spies. He sends them to one city. He gives them a defined mission of 3 days only. He gives them defined parameters. Give me the strategic analysis of the city and get thee home. What strategic questions is he looking for? The fortification. What else is he looking for? Right. Remember, you're dealing with a walled city. How do you take out a walled city? How do you take out a walled city?
Breach the wall.
Breach the wall, maybe. Or? Starve them out. Besiege them. To besiege them, you need to know
where the water
comes into the city, what the water sources are. Classic ancient issue. Your Yerushalayim fell because of that. You need to know where the storehouses are. There's information you need. To do that, you need to get into the city, and you need to ask a lot of questions. How much strategic information do Yeshua's spies accumulate in the 3 days hiding in the mountains outside of Yericho? How much strategic information do Yeshua's spies bring back? When they say to Yehoshua at the end of chapter 2, their report, which consists of one sentence, and they said to Yehoshua, God has given the land into our hands and the inhabitants of Canaan have melted before us. How much strategic information did they glean? Zero. So was Yehoshua's mission a success or failure? It's a failure. Yehoshua learned all the mistakes that Moshe made. And he corrected every one of them. And Yeshua's mission, spy mission, was a failure from the word go. It's a comedy of errors. What that failure was, Bezrat Hashem, next week. I still have a question that I asked last week that I haven't answered, right?